Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's always nice to have you along. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, I heard Joe Bender talking Friday on the show about how she loves the month of October.
Yes.
And, you know, it's hard to argue with that, isn't it? This first, you know.
First
part of the month, yeah. You just get these fresh days. And I mentioned last week I was out in the middle of North Dakota where you're just watching all the harvesting take place.
Yeah.
So just, yeah.
Beautiful. I did a little weekend camping about an hour north of the Twin Cities over the weekend, seeing the sunlight hit the top of the trees that are just starting to turn colors. Just gorgeous.
That's good. It was nice. So we're going to talk today. Yesterday we talked about, Pastor Appreciation Month. Today we're talking church as well, and we're going to talk about your church and my church. So, Ted, what would you say? What kind of church do you attend? Would you say it's vibrant, it's introverted, it's average? Complacent.
Boy, I'd have to use a few adjectives, I think, to describe it. Thankfully,
there's probably a combination of
biblical,
several,
spirit-filled,
right?
Sure. Compassionate, diverse. A good variety of words there.
You read it just like your pastor wrote it.
Yeah,
up
that's
for
right.
Us.
Yeah,
very well done. By the way, speaking of yesterday, we did a little drawing and want to congratulate Sally from Linwood, North Dakota, and Don from Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. They were the winners of our resources. We gave away some Discovery House atlases and the Moody commentary. Well, let's get to today's topic, because we're going to focus on new research, new findings from research that's been actually been going on for some time. It's a wonderful resource for pastors and churches to help you, help your church to really become effective and grow into a spiritually vibrant community of believers. And the book we're going to reference is called Rise, Bold Strategies to Transform Your Church. You know, it's one thing for individuals to transform, but if you can get an entire congregation transformed, that's where change can really take place. And we're going to find out more today as we welcome Kelly Parkinson. Kelly is the primary storyteller for Rise, the new book. She's a co-author of four books featuring the discoveries of Reveal. The Reveal study came out back, well, we'll discover. It came out, originated out of Willow Creek Church back in the 90s. And Kelly was involved in that. Prior to Reveal, she spent 5 years as a communications director for Willow Creek Community Church, following a 25-year marketplace career. And it's been a while since we've talked to her, but we're going to talk about Reveal and new research in churches. Kelly, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Well, it's good to be with you, Neil.
So maybe we should just start out with a little bit of background before we get to what we've discovered about eight archetypes of churches that this comes out of significant research of somewhat 2,000 churches, right, that have taken part in this.
Yes, there have been 2,000 churches since 2008, really 2006-07 when we really first got started. But the very first survey was done for Willow Creek Community Church, and I was the communications director then. And churches do surveys all the time. Most of the time they're looking for who's in the seats, what kind of demographics they have, and that kind of thing. And Willow wanted to find out something different. They wanted to find out which church activities they do are doing the best job at helping people grow their relationship with Christ. So we created this. I had a consultant I'd worked with in the past, phenomenal guy, and he gave us some pro bono work, and he created this survey. And so our real goal was to figure out which church activities. Was it small groups? Was it our midweek services? Was it our weekend services? Was it the serving experience? What was it that really helped people grow most effectively and their relationship with Christ? And the finding, Neil, was that none of those things really did much. You know, that the church activities really didn't have a huge impact on, and when we talk about spiritual growth, it's love of God and love of others. So whether you went to church a lot or a little, whether you were in a small group or not, didn't seem to make a lot of difference in terms of how much you loved God and how much you loved others. There was not a lot of difference. There were other things that made a huge difference, and those were the big findings out of Reveal, and that's really, I think, changed the mindset of a lot of pastors around the country about what are the most important things, what are the most important next steps to bring to their people. It's probably not to get them engaged in a whole bunch of new activities.
It's always hard, though, to find, I guess, to get the results, if we're not committed to doing something about it, right? I mean, I'm sure that, you know, as you've done these surveys over the years, even at, you know, Willow, it was probably kind of disappointing. Say, hey, we're putting all this effort into this, and turns out this isn't really effective.
That's exactly right. It's a hard place to get to, but it is so wonderful at the same time, because pastors didn't get into the business of doing church in order to bring a lot of people into a building. You know, they didn't do it to entertain people. They dedicate their lives to this work because they want people to get to know Jesus Christ and to grow in a relationship with Him and to have an impact on this world that we live in. And this survey really change the mindset of pastors in terms of what it is they need to encourage their people to do in order to accomplish those things. What they need their people to do is actually use the church as a resource to help them engage in their own efforts to grow a relationship with Christ through personal spiritual practices, through reflection on Scripture, through prayer, through solitude, and then really to see that those practices transform their hearts. And that's really been the direction that a lot of churches have taken. I can be very pragmatic and tell you the steps they've taken to do that, but let you jump in and guide my rambling here.
We will dive in a little bit more deeply and come back and talk about using the church as a resource and a little bit more on that. But I'm interested, maybe, you know, to even back up a bit, is how important is measurement in a church? I mean, is this just kind of maybe a Western idea where, you know, pragmatism, it's all about sort of numbers or stats, those kinds of things?
You know what? The truth is, spiritual growth, love of God, love of us, it's really so hard to even imagine measuring something like that. And yet, being able to try to get a gauge on it is one of the most important things pastors try to do. To be honest, even without measuring it, I think most pastors do. They listen to the anecdotes. They hear the stories from people around the water cooler. They bring in sort of their own temperature gauge of what's going on in their churches. Is it a Western concept? Maybe, but it seems to when you do measure something, those things tend to get attention, and those things tend to not only drive decisions, but actually make things happen and change oftentimes for the better.
As we talk about the eight churches that are described in this new book, Rise, which is kind of really a summation of these, of the 2,000 plus, and you've had, what, it's, what, 500? I mean, it's millions of people.
Yeah, half a million people.
Yeah,
right.
half a million people that have taken this, so there's pretty substantial data behind this. At what point was it clear that there were some kind of general patterns emerging and that you could actually sort of put these together to help, you know, put a label on? And I guess is labeling a good thing to say, well, this church is, mm-hmm. you know, self-motivated, this one's troubled, this one's complacent?
Let me answer the question of how it came to be, because I think it's fascinating. It's truly, you know, God just brought it to us because we weren't looking for it. We had just started doing the surveys. People were taking these spiritual inventories. We were giving pastors the results from the survey. And pastors were contacting us saying, you know, it's great to get all this data, but I need someone to help me walk through it. I don't know what it means. And so we started offering these half-hour, telephone conversations and just walk through their reports with them and see how the numbers came together to suggest what was going on in their church. And I was the one on the other end of those calls oftentimes. And what happened, it's just very interesting, is that I would talk, for example, to a church in Florida, a big non-denominational church, And it would have certain characteristics in terms of, you know, maybe the beliefs were a little bit low, maybe the practices were a little bit low, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it would be a kind of church that had certain issues. Then I talked to like a mainline church in Minneapolis or a small Assembly of God church, say, in Nebraska or something along those, and they would have the same characteristics. We would find these characteristics that define different patterns of churches, and you mentioned some of them. The complacent church. The complacent church is a church, for example, where you do have people who have been coming to church for years, for a lifetime. So older congregations, long tenured attendance at churches, but their beliefs are weak. Their practices are weak. They don't serve. Their attitudes are weak. In other words, they've been coming to church forever, and that's how they define their faith. They kind of, it's sort of being checked off a box, I went to church on Sunday, and it doesn't impact their lives. And they're pretty happy with their churches. They were pretty satisfied with those churches. And those complacent churches have these deep roots of spiritual lethargy that are very hard to dig up, but the good news is we've seen many dozens now of complacent churches dig up those roots and move into a much more energized place. But complacent church, introverted church, these really showed up as personalities, the energized church, and I can talk about them far more than you want me to, but these are the kinds of patterns that just came out of these telephone conversations I was having with pastors where we would pick up on the fact that these characteristics repeated themselves even when the churches were vastly different in terms of size, in terms of history, in terms of geography.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back and dive in a little bit deeper. And as you're listening, maybe you've just heard, been reminded that, no, this isn't just something for a few select churches. There are these eight spiritual personalities, quote unquote, describe churches all across our nation. And our goal, obviously, is that the church become more spiritually effective. How do our beliefs and practices actually help us grow and transform? We're talking about the new book called Rise, Bold Strategies to Transform Your Church. And Kelly Parkinson is helping us with that. She's the co-author of four books. She's the prime storyteller for this book, Rise. It's based on the Reveal studies. By the way, you can find out more about those resources at revealnow.com. And I think you'll like to have a copy of this book, especially if you're in a church leadership position in ministry. We've got three copies of the book Rise to give away, thanks to NAM Press. And we'll do that as a drawing at the end of the hour. So if you would like to sign up for that, please give us a call at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. The book is full of practical insights, not only revealing about, kind of where we might be as a congregation, but then how we can get to the next level. And that's possible. We'll talk about it in a moment. 877-93-FAITH, and join us with your question, too, as you call. And we're back with Kelly Parkinson in just a minute. David Crowder inviting us to the reality that every church can take the next step for spiritual growth. We're talking about it today with Kelly Parkinson, who is a researcher and served as a number of years as communication director for Willow Creek Community Church in South Barrington, Illinois, and had a 25-year marketing career before that, and has been the one of the lead voices in the Reveal studies in terms of just helping churches and leadership teams understand the research and the findings. And she's put together a new book called Rise, Bold Strategies to Transform Your Church. We've got some copies to give away and got folks signing up for that. And thank you for calling, and if you got a question, hopefully you can join us with that as well. But we got three copies to give away. I know you're going to enjoy that. Kelly, we just sort of touched on a couple of these personalities. Maybe just to do a quick snapshot summary of all eight personalities, and we'll dive in a little bit deeper after that.
Okay. Let me start off. I talked about the complacent church. The complacent church represents, this is important, 17% of our database. So what that means is If you think about sort of the courage it takes, you touched on that when we first started this conversation, for a pastor to invite his congregation to take a survey to get these results, realizing they will expect some sort of response, because typically like 30 to 50% of the people will take the survey. This means a lot of – it means to me that if there are 17% of the churches in our database that are complacent, there are really way more of those kind of churches out there. There are lots of complacent churches out there. And these are the churches that are typically, again, congregants are older, they've been coming to church forever, and it's almost – I had one pastor call it – it's sometimes he feels like he's leading more of a social club than he is a church. You know, it's just sort of like the thing they do on Sunday, and then it really doesn't touch them the rest of the week. But all of that can change, and I'll talk about that later. As I said, we've seen a lot of complacent churches advance dramatically, but quickly I'll go through the other seven archetypes or personalities. Another one that is spiritually immature, the congregants are spiritually immature, is called the troubled church. The troubled church is exactly what the word signifies. It is unhappy with the church. For some reason, something has happened, and the congregants are really unhappy, and they are leaving the church. They're typically spiritually immature. You've got low beliefs, low practices, low serving, but the real significant factor is that high dissatisfaction, and I can talk about that a little bit more if you want. But another spiritually immature group is the extroverted church. I love this. You tend to see a lot of church plants kind of fall into this extroverted church category. And what it is just, again, what the word implies. These are people who are relatively immature in their faith, but they love their church, and they are just serving their hearts out. They are having an impact on their community, and that is really a value that drives much of their faith walk, is this extroverted, servant-oriented type of behavior. So the extroverted church. The average church is what it says as well. An average church, a pastor leading an average church, to me, this is one of the hardest ones to talk to, because nobody wants to be average. And you open up the report for an average church, and there are no arrows. There are no signs of any kind of difference from any of the numbers against this whole database that we have there. It's just a flat line. It's like a flat line report. So it's average. There's nothing that really distinguishes the church from any other church around it or in our database. And I can talk about more of that. The introverted church is a big group in our, again, like the complacent church, it's 17% of our database. And the introverted church is a very spiritually mature church. Beliefs are strong. Practices are strong. Love of God, love of others, pretty good. And then you've got, you know, but they are pretty much in this self-contained community of their church. There's very little servant-like behavior, servant-like attitudes. There's not a lot of evangelism. There's no expression of their faith really outside of that church community, if you will. The self-motivated church is a little bit of an odd duck, because it seems weird that people would be self-motivated. In other words, you've got a real strong, spiritually strong congregation. They are just thriving. They're serving. They love God, love others. Their beliefs, their practices are strong. Everything is rocking, except they are not very happy with their church. Their satisfaction is low. And that is, or not low, it's at least, it's lower than you would think. For people who are just on fire about their faith, why would they be going to a church where they aren't all that, they're sort of lukewarm about it? So that's about 10% of the database. The energized church is one of our strongest categories, and this is where you see beliefs and practices gaining ground. These people are in love with their church. They just are on fire to follow its vision and direction and to fulfill its mission. But their beliefs and practices are a little bit lower than you would expect, given how devoted they are to their church. This is the personality, Neil, where most churches can get to. A complacent church, I've seen dozens go from complacent to energized. I've seen extroverted go from extroverted to energized, average go to energized. You can get there. The last category, which is 8% of the database, is the vibrant church. This is where faith is really strong. These people are absolutely spiritually thriving, and they just love their church. But they have a faith that transcends their role in the church. The church is an enabler to these people who are just having a tremendous impact on the world for Jesus. And those are the churches that we – and you talk to these pastors leading these churches, and they're also – typically, I just very humble, very, you know, this is all to God's glory, and this is, and these are the churches, though, that we want to just encourage to plant churches, to spread their DNA around the world so that we can really have the best, or the most impact for Jesus as possible. So those are the eight: the troubled, complacent, extroverted, average, introverted, self-motivated, energized, the vibrant churches. Eight categories. Every church, we believe, falls into one of those categories. Now, that's not to mean it's always clear-cut, okay, because oftentimes a church can share, you know, one strong personality and then a secondary one. But every church will fall into one of those categories.
And I think you talked in the book about sort of a shadow personality, right? There's maybe sort of something maybe kind of lurking in the background.
Yep. Yep, that's right. And that's kind of, if you think about an average, and for example, and we really want to talk about it when we're talking to an average church, because it's not too helpful to be average. What is it I'm supposed to work on? Everything?
Yeah.
So to know a secondary personality, like whether your people are more introverted or more extroverted or a little bit complacent, that gives you a little more guidance on what the best next step might be.
You know, it's probably important to talk about this balance of developing faith on our own with being engaged in our churches, because I think you addressed that, right? And you've sort of mentioned that, you know, the successful, the vibrant churches are, the church is a tool, but it's not sort of the be-all, end-all, right?
I'd say the church is, oh my gosh, I'd say the church in the vibrant case is just like what we all dream a church can be, which is the catalyst for so much energy that could just kind of, you know, can spread through the community, through the people who attend it. So I think that the role of the church is to be the great coach. You know, I'm thinking of NFL football now, but one of those great coaches who can just pull the best out of their teams and just come up with these extraordinary wins. That's the role of the church. And they've got assembled with them some of the best Christians, or some of the strongest Christians that we see in terms of congregant bodies. So, yeah, that's the vibrant church.
Susan from North Dakota just left a question. She said, did you obtain your data only from Protestant churches, or did you include any Catholic churches? Maybe just say a bit more about the database. You got a minute or two before the break.
Sure, I'd love to. And the database is very, we call it very diverse. It's not representative, Susan. This is a good question. And to your point, we have, like, I think we have one Catholic church in the database. We have talked quite a bit to the Catholic, to different Catholic groups, but we don't have Catholic churches really represented in the database. But what we do have is we have a lot of mainline churches. We have a lot of non-denominational churches. I think we have the biggest category that we have in the whole database. 30% of our database is a category called other, which means we have a lot of the smaller denominations, like say Church of God or some of those others that are not quite so mainline as like Episcopal, Lutheran, Methodist, but we have all of those as well. So we have a very diverse database. Where we miss, Neil, on being representative is 80-90% of the churches in the country are under 250 in terms of attendance, and we have I think maybe a quarter of our churches are under 250, but we don't have 80 or 90%. So we have a diverse database, not necessarily representative.
We'll talk more with Callie Parkinson as we're unpacking some of the new research in the latest Reveal study summary, I guess we could call it that way. Is your congregation engaged? You can help take your church to the next step. We're talking about it today. The book is called Rise, Bold Strategies to Transform Your Church, with Callie Parkinson, and she is helping us work through this. We've got some copies to give away. You can sign up for that and join us with a question as well. Three copies we'll give away at the end of the hour. Sign up for the drawing at 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. More with Callie Parkinson in just a moment. Parkinson's my guest today. We're talking about the new book called Rise, Bold Strategies to Transform Your Church. You know, for 10 years or more now, Reveal has been researching and has been the gold standard for measuring spiritual vitality based on its database of 500,000 congregants and over 2,000 diverse churches across America. This is the latest kind of summary of those findings, and what it reveals is that there are 8 spiritual personalities to describe most of the churches, at least based on these 500,000 people that have taken this survey. And out of that, some very helpful strategies that we can transform our church. And if you're a pastor or a lay leader or just involved in your church ministry, you want to see it grow, this is a good resource. And we've got some copies to give away. You can sign up for that at 877-93-FAITH. And if you want to find out more about the Reveal studies, you can go to revealnow.com. Callie Parkinson is the primary storyteller for RISE and has been working with the Reveal since it began, and served at Willow Creek Church as a communications director there for a number of years before that. And so he's talking with us today, and just want to mentioned about, you know, you don't have necessarily a high sampling of small churches. Do larger churches, have a better chance to rise than, say, a small church? I mean, is size kind of a factor for moving to the next step?
I would say we haven't seen that. Not at all. There are always factors that impact church size. I mean, oftentimes, you know, I was just in rural Wisconsin this weekend. So you're in a small community, or you're in Detroit where there's an economic challenge going on and people are fleeing the city, or you're in different areas. So size is a factor, but it is certainly not an obstacle to becoming a more vibrant. We see vibrant churches of all sizes.
The survey is it's a lot about measuring, I guess, what you call member satisfaction. So, you know, isn't that just sort of surrendering to a consumer mindset if we're actually doing that?
Sure. You know what? That's a really good question, and a lot of pastors have asked us that. I'd underscore, we aren't asking people, are you satisfied with your church, period. We're asking, how happy are you with how the church is helping you grow spiritually? That's always what the question is about. How do you feel about the church's role in your spiritual growth? All right. And so that's what they're responding to. Now, should we measure satisfaction with that? Well, I don't know, but I will tell you this. There are 3 factors that I can tell you statistically, I can verify, that if people are really happy with how their church is doing 3 things, the church is thriving. And those 3 things, Neil, are: helps me understand the Bible in depth, helps me develop a personal relationship with Christ, and challenges me to grow and take next steps. When the congregants are just fired up about how well the church is doing those 3 things, and notice they just start with the word helps me do these things, that's when a church is really on the move.
You know, several times in going through these personality types, the subject of preaching the Bible came up, or that the preaching needed to be more Bible-focused, kind of the whole Bible. A lot of them end up using, Lucado's kind of, you know, the big picture, or maybe something for purpose-driven life. But talk about, is preaching the Bible, is that really one of the keys as well to taking the church to the next level? And shouldn't that be sort of understood or common sense?
Well, it should be common sense. In fact, that was one of the first things when Reveal came out. It was like we said, you know, the biggest thing here is the absolute, if there were, a church could only do one thing to help their people grow spiritually, it would be to get them to reflect on Scripture every day for meaning in their life. Open the Bible, reflect on Scripture, listen to God for meaning in your life. Well, duh, most pastors would say, you know, we didn't need research to tell us that. And my answer back to them is, then why aren't people doing it? I mean, these are all churchgoers that we've measured. And I've got churches where less than 5% of the people reflect on Scripture every day for meaning in their life. I've got churches where 40%, and that's about as high as it goes, 40-45% of their people reflect on Scripture for meaning in their lives every day. So, yes, it's really important. And preaching the Bible, I don't want to get too specific about that, because what you're really, it goes back to this helps me kind of attitude related to the churches that have the most thriving congregations. It's helping me become capable of hearing God's word on my own, so I can lean into that every day for every decision and move I make.
Yeah. As you describe it in the book, and, you know, from those that want to find out more, you can find out more at revealnow.com. The book is called Rise, Bold Strategies to Transform Your Church. But you highlight, you give examples. You know, here's a church that fits in this category. And oftentimes there were several leadership decisions. Just say about, you know, what does it take to make as a leader now to make a decision that's going to move you from where you are to something better?
Well, it all rests in the hands of leaders who are going to embrace the findings and say, okay, we fall into this category. We from Reveal can tell them, I've seen churches in every one of these categories, including the strongest one, get stronger. Every one of these categories can become much stronger in terms of the spiritual momentum in their congregations. I can tell them what the steps are. The steps are not the same, Neil, for each one of these archetypes, but let me talk about some of the leadership decisions that we see being very powerful ones. And one of them, I'm going to go back to my average church. The number one thing an average church needs to do is not come up with a new program. I'm thinking of a church in Texas where it was an average church and they weren't too happy about it, and they were coming up with, I need an evangelism training program, I need a spiritual growth pathway to communicate to my people. You know, those were the things they were going after. And then a young group in the staff said, we don't need that. We need to get our own spiritual act together. And I remember the senior pastor turning around and saying, like, what? And we don't have our own team spiritual kind of energy pulled together. And this is something that a pastor in South Africa really put very clearly to me. It's the need to remind yourself, Neil, of this first love. Why did you become a pastor in the first place? Okay. It was to devote your life to Jesus. And I remember this pastor from South Africa coming in. He wanted to go over his Reveal results, and he was an average church. I mean, it was a flat line when you looked at his report, no distinguishing characteristics at all. And he looked at me and said, what can I do? And I said, well, you know, the truth is, for an average church, the antidote to average is leadership. And he got tears in his eyes. And he said, my staff and I just went out on a retreat 2 weeks ago. We came back. We all came to the same conclusion. And that is that, like the church of Ephesus in Revelation, when Christ tells them, you've been loyal to me, you're doing so many good works for me, but you've lost your first love. And for a complacent church, for an average church, those are a couple of the top two. The first steps they need to take is to pull their people together, the staff, the lay leaders, and go back and find the energy that comes from the first love. Because I've been in church work. It's a highly operational kind of environment to be in. You're just going from weekend service to weekend service to ministries, all this stuff. You're very busy. It's really easy to lose sight individually and collectively of why you're in it in the first place.
I assume that, you know, if the leadership doesn't buy in or engage, that the attenders aren't necessarily going to either, right? I mean, it has to come from the top, right?
Well, it goes back to really what I just said about the church satisfaction. When people become, we see this all the time, the first thing that moves in a church is how people feel about it. If a church introduces some steps, I can get really practical about some of these next steps that we've seen churches take. For example, an extroverted church, the number one thing an extroverted church needs to do, and this is, remember, I'll just remind you, it's a church where you've got spiritually immature people, but they are just totally into this servant-oriented sort of vision. The first thing they need to do is introduce something like Alpha, the Alpha course, which really is something that engages people in the questions of faith, kicking the tire on faith, and really encouraging people to kind of get their arms around these beliefs that are all about all the core Christian kind of foundation. And that's the kind of next step they need to take. All of them have different things that they need to do, but the leadership has to decide to do it. You see where I'm going with this? The leadership has to decide to introduce Alpha, that is the next step. It wouldn't be the right next step for an introverted church. It wouldn't be the right next step for an energized church. They have other next steps that would be more appropriate. So it's kind of about knowing where you are, back to embracing the results, and then making the decisions to take the steps that are really going to have the greatest impact on the congregation you lead.
And does it have to be something, I mean, do you have to kind of create it yourself? Because I noticed that in several of them, there are a lot of new initiatives taken by the pastors and leadership teams, but to energize a church. I'm thinking, well, you know, sometimes maybe as a congregation go, well, it's just the latest. Okay, we tried this, and now we're going to try this, and it just sort of feels like the next new plan or the next idea.
You know what? I'm smiling back here hearing you because I'm thinking of a pastor I talked to, and he was a Wisconsin church. And he was in the, I'm going to misspeak here, I think he was an average church, okay? But we were talking about that, and it was his second survey, and they hadn't really moved very much. And I said, well, what have you been doing? Have you ever thought of doing X, like a Bible-based curriculum? I can talk about that. This is a really strong thing I've seen a lot of churches do, which is this integrated kind of a campaign that is Bible-based, where you've got weekend service teaching, you've got small group curriculum, and even children's curriculum all tied up in the same sort of study for a 6 to 8 week period, and it really brings a lot of energy to church. Have you done something like that? Do you have like an orientation program or an alpha program? And he was just laughing. He said, well, we did 2 years ago. Everything I asked, it was like, well, we did it 2 years ago. And it's like they got off track because they started planting churches and sort of left some of these things behind. And that was what he was interpreting as a loss, the reason they had lost some energy. So it can turn into, that's why when we talk, Neil, about this being transformative, it's not about a silver bullet. I'm not saying these steps are silver bullets. These are not going to change a culture, but collectively moving in a direction that incorporates some of these things we know can work can transform a culture and a church into a much stronger place.
Carol had called and just asked if you wanted to know first if there's sample surveys that a church could take, but also wanted to know, could you repeat the three things, the help me statements? So summarize those again.
Oh, my gosh. This is it. If a congregation marks that it is very satisfied with how a church is helping me understand the Bible in depth, that's number one. Helps me develop a personal relationship with Christ, that's number two, and challenges me to grow and take next steps. If a church is really, really rocking on those three things, the congregation is thriving.
And again, I know as you talked about in the book, it's not, this has to be personal and individual, right? Because sometimes we can just, we're all about the church, and the church maybe kind of draws us in, and that becomes the place where we just, it's our life is surrounded around there, but we don't really have any spiritual roots on our own.
Well, that's kind of the issue with, I think, of the energized church with that issue and some others, because what happens is sometimes your spiritual journey can feel like, and in the numbers we can see it, that the journey is more about developing a relationship with your church than it is developing a relationship with Christ, that you're defining, a congregation is defining its faith by its love and devotion to its church and when it's involved in church activities, as opposed to using the church and understanding the church as a catalyst for your growth as an individual in your relationship with Christ. So it's the difference between what relationship you're trying to grow. You're trying to make your pastor happy, or you're trying to develop a relationship with Christ, and using some of these tremendous tools that churches can provide to help you grow that faith.
It does take some humility and willingness on the pastor's side, doesn't it, to be able to say, we're not hitting the mark here, or there's, we've got positive things here, but there's other things that we need to shore up. Pastoral work can be pretty discouraging anyway, right? Does this bring out more discouraging?
I have to tell you, when I talked, I've talked to hundreds of church leaders at this point who lead hundreds of different churches, and they are almost never surprised by the archetype their church falls in. If I tell them they're an average, they are often using language before I am, we have a complacent congregation. They use that language. Pastors know their people. They know their people. Reveal is less about revealing something new than it really is putting some numbers to some gut feelings they've had all the way along. I mean, honestly, I think pastors could read this book and figure out what archetype they're in without taking a survey at all.
Sure. Yeah, and you won't find pictures in there, so you're okay, pastors. You can read it without the concern that your picture's posted there, so it's not like the post office. 10 Most Wanted. Talking with Kelly Parkinson about the new book called Rise, Bold Strategies to Transform Your Church, and it is just some of the latest data collected from the Reveal studies, the Reveal surveys, which have been going on here for 10-plus years, over 2,000 churches involved in that, a database of some 500,000 congregants. And so we really have a wide area of insight to draw from, and you can learn a lot about the church personalities, and more importantly, learn about some effective ways to become, to stop being ineffective. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. We do have some copies of the book to give away, and you're welcome to join us if you have a question. Maybe the conversation sparked a thought. You're welcome to join in. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And we'll draw for three copies of the book here at the end of the hour and take your questions coming up. Talking about RISE, bold strategies to transform your church. According to a Reveal survey, some 70% of churches are likely to be described as stagnant and out of touch. But evidence also shows that every one of them can break out of the spiritual lethargy and become dynamic, high-impact agents for Christ. That's where we want to go. And we're getting some great insight today from Callie Parkinson, who's a primary storyteller for RISE. And she's co-authored several books featuring discoveries of the Reveal surveys. And consults regularly with church leaders regarding the Reveal survey results. She's spent a number of years as communications director for Willow Creek Community Church and had a 25-year career in the marketplace as well. And joining us today to talk about RISE, it's published by NAB Press. We had one of our callers wanted to know if there's is there a connection with parachurch? Do these maybe issues show up there as well, or is there a connection?
You know what? Because the findings about these personalities, these archetypes, these eight patterns are very church-specific, we don't have parachurch findings that are similar, but we have done a lot of work with parachurches, and I'm looking at that category broadly, like we've done a lot of work with Christian universities, Christian high schools, BSF, Bible Study Fellowship just did a couple of runs of Reveal. And these are organizations that are not churches, but they are doing something to try to advance the faith of the people that are within their organizations. And so they use our foundational findings about how spiritual growth seems to manifest itself and what the next steps seem to be to help them understand whether or not they're being effective.
We're talking about things that spark momentum. I assume that it can go the other way as well. You can have sort of downturns. Maybe one of these vibrant or energized churches could slip back, right, if wrong things happen.
I can tell you a story about that right now, a vibrant church. In fact, the case study in the book for the vibrant church, and I want to emphasize that to any pastors or church leaders listening, is we have real, you know, boots on the ground pastor stories about how they went from one of these archetypes to another and what they did and how they struggled and all that sort of thing. But the vibrant church is a church named Family Church in Sutherland, Oregon, and they were very strong. They had a spiritual vitality index, which is kind of this number that is a gauge that we give to churches when they first take the survey, of like 90, and they took it again, and it was like 96, and that's really at the top. It's almost like getting a grade in school, so it's sort of that same same kind of rating. Very strong church. And then they took a survey 3 years later, and it had gone, they were still really strong, but it had gone down. They'd left the vibrant category, and they were in the energized place. And I talked to the pastors, and they said, you know, Callie, here's what happened. And this is what happens. This is what happens, Neil, is that a church leadership group will feel like its discipleship energy and all of that is just thriving. Everything is rolling along. It's great. And so they'll turn their attention to something else, for example, church planting or some other ministry initiative or some global sort of effort. They'll turn their attention and that shift of it goes back to the role of the church. I mean, it the catalyst of the church, that need for them to be inspired by the church, even the strongest Christians lean into the church for inspiration. People kind of get a little bit off And that's what happened at this church that was the case study in the Vibrant Church, is they had planted a church. They put a lot of energy, a lot of strong people into the planting of this church, and they had dialed back their efforts in terms of trying to help people move along on their journey at the home church, and that's what showed up in the survey.
Well, as I think you describe in the book, I guess, you know, churches or pastors could understand, well, we're all doing well, so you know, people have sort of got it. They're on their own, but they still need need the body and the one another to keep encouraging them, don't they?
That's right. That's right. That's what I think. It goes back to the coaching metaphor, I think, honestly. I mean, it is that we are a body, and the church, you know, when you're dealing in a professional kind of team body, like an NFL kind of situation, the coach is very important, but you've got very strong players out there. And in a weaker system, like when you're just starting out in football, peewee football or whatever, the coach has a different kind of role. And that's sort of what the coach is always the coach, though. You need a coach in all those kind of environments. And that's the role of the church, is always be that coach, that encourager, and they operate at different levels depending on where their church happens to be in the spiritual spectrum.
Let's take a call from Karen in Duluth. Karen has a question about, I guess, the pastor's spiritual growth. Karen, you're on with Callie Parkinson. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Hope she can come back. There are so many more questions I want to ask. And you mentioned, it sounds like about focus is so very important, but before I heard that, I wondered if the pastor's own level of spiritual growth or even his well-being in terms of burnout had a lot to do with these ratings or transitions that these churches make.
Okay.
You know, it's hard to, but we don't measure that because we don't have specific questions just for the senior pastor or for the leadership team in terms of their own level of spiritual fire. So we don't have that. But I will tell you, and you know this too, probably, being in ministry, it's a tough place to be. It's a run every day kind of a role, and you can get depleted pretty quickly. But I think that going back to some of these fundamentals of why am I doing this and what can I do, I think there's also this guesswork that is so much a part of ministry that I think this is the best thing to do. I think it is. I mean, for all that you might be concerned about the implication that you're trying to measure spiritual growth, you can actually, there's a plus in measurement because you can understand what might be the best next step because you get some facts on the table. I mean, Bill Hybels said it well, facts are your friends. You know, sometimes you don't like what you see, but they are facts. If you can look at that and take a next step, you can also see those numbers change, which will affirm often what pastors know in their hearts they ought to be doing anyway.
I never liked that quote from Bill. But anyway, thanks. We've got just a couple of minutes left. I was just curious, you know, sometimes it seems like maybe attenders aren't always interested in getting challenged about their spiritual apathy. Any words for pastors about how to maybe encourage together the body to go to the next step?
You know, I mentioned this earlier. Number one, there is no archetype or one of these eight categories that every church falls in that can't get stronger. And the good news is, in this book, we talk about what we know about the three next steps for each one of these archetypes that we have seen be effective in multiple examples of churches that, for example, were an introverted church that became vibrant. All right. What did they do? We tell you in this book. So that's really the encouragement. Sorry, Neil. Now I've lost my train of thought.
No, that's right. Just about encouraging the congregation. Say, you know, we really, you know, our purpose here is that we grow, we become stronger in our beliefs and our practices, and that, you know, maybe just an encouragement to pastors today take the lead there.
You know what? I think the complacency that exists is understandable. I mean, and it's not a complacency as much as just the burden of life in general, the busyness of life in general, and going to church and faith is just something that the good news is that all your people are coming to church. And also the good news is, and I think this is all good news coming out of this book, is that people are hungry for the energy that a relationship with Christ can bring to them. And there are very practical ways to bring that energy or introduce that energy to them, and I think the most encouraging thing, Neil, is that we see this happen with these complacent churches that people have been coming to these churches for decades. I've got some wonderful case studies that I talk about in the book. People in their 70s would walk up to the pastor and say, before you did this, whatever initiative it was, I had never opened a Bible, and these people had been coming to church since, you know, since the early days of their adulthood. And this is the kind of thing that I don't think we appreciate. It's not about, it's never about what pastors do and where people, it's about what the Holy Spirit can do. It's about what God can do. And the church is there to open those doors and open those windows. And I would just encourage pastors to do whatever they can to do that. And I know it's discouraging sometimes.
Well, we need to hope in this book
we give some steps that'll help them.
Great steps available. Check it out. Revealnow.com is the website. Kelly Parkinson, my guest today on Connecting Faith.